Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Show. I said that. You were about to jump in there, weren't you?
I was.
About to do it. We never discussed it beforehand. We've got such an amazing guest for you today. Stu, you're a huge fan of this person.
It's Cole Frampton.
God. Former Ring Magazine Fighter of the Year. Put my notes away.
Super featherweight champ. Right, let's have a little look. We've got some notes here.
Let's pull them up away.
Right. He held world championships in two weight classes, including the WBA Unified and IBF Super Bantamweight titles between 2014 and 2016, and the WBA Super Featherweight title from 2016 to 2017. He also held the WBO interim featherweight title in 2018. He's won them all. And he's one of the nicest people you've ever met, as you are about to find out.
And if you're watching the boxing on TNT Sports, he's usually a pundit on there as well. He's on a great transition to being a pundit on TNT Sports. And it's, and we're going to mention he's got a whiskey out. Stablemate whiskey. So yeah, and honestly, Cole's such a nice bloke. We met him a little while ago, agreed to come on the show. We couldn't be more pleased that he gave up his time for this, and we had a really, really great chat about his career, boxing, MMA, Ngannou, Joshua, all that kind of stuff going on. So, yeah, shall we just crack on with it?
Not before we mention our sponsor.
Not before then.
We are sponsored by Ferocious Fightwear. So not only do they do these jazzy pink gum shields, they do wraps, they do rash guards, shorts, they do everything. So head over to ferociousfightwear.com and, yeah, show your love for our sponsors and buy yourself a little bit of kit to... I thought you were going to put that in then.
It's jazzy, but not... too jazzy.
See what he done there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy today's episode of the MMA Fan Show with the delightful Cole Frampton.
Hello, Cole. How's it going, mate?
I'm going okay, mate. Well, I say okay, but I've been a little bit under the weather for the last few days. But apart from that, I'm doing all right.
Well, I hope you're all right. And I think you've had some good news recently. And I just wanted to say that the reason this all sort of happened was because we did a little watch-along for TNT Sports for a UFC event. Sadly, I think it was the one where Volkanovski got head-kicked by Makhachev, which I'm still not fully over. But you very kindly sent me this. A little Stablemate whiskey. And am I hearing correctly on your socials? It's all sold out. Or it was sold out when I last looked.
We sold out. We'll be getting another run in very soon. So we just done a deal with Tesco's NI as well. So we are probably, I would say we're ahead of where we thought we would be. We only launched it October of last year. So you know, we're doing really well and the feedback's been really good on it. It's a decent product. It's a good drink. It's a good whiskey. And people are enjoying it.
Yeah, so Stablemate whiskey. And you, like, what is it with Irish combat sports stars and their whiskey? Why is it going so well for you all?
Yeah, I don't know. I've no idea. I mean, look, you've got McGregor, he's got his whiskey, and he's an enigma, isn't he? He can sell anything, that lad. Are you, you're hold on, it's freezing a lot. Is this me or is this you guys?
You froze a couple of times, but it should be fine. No one will be able to see us other than on these cameras and stuff anyway, so don't worry. You just crack on.
Okay, so, look, someone approached me about getting involved in this whiskey, and I thought, why not? I'll have a go. I enjoy whiskey, and we'll see. But I've been very involved in the whole process, like even down to the labelling and the name of the whiskey was my idea. But look, obviously McGregor's the boil, isn't he? And he's done his whiskey. And if we do 2% of what Conor McGregor's done with his, I'll be very happy.
Before we sort of go back and sort of start as your career started, Cole. Now you've retired from boxing. Obviously we know that there's presenting work and stuff like that, and you made the documentary, which I want to talk about. But what's the sort of day in the life of Cole Frampton now? Because obviously you said that, you know, you put this whiskey together. Like, is it just, you know, a pretty chilled time now? You can kind of do all the things that you never had to do when you was training.
Yeah, well, it is sometimes, and other times it's really hectic. So, I mean, for the last 8 weeks, there hasn't been too much on, but this week and the coming weeks, it's starting to get pretty busy as well. So busy having meetings with a whiskey or for the whiskey, and talking to different people about that, doing the stuff with TNT as well. Bringing my kids to football feels like every day of the week as well. So life's good. You know, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying being at home.
Lovely.
Well, let's take you back, because we always like to start this show when we talk to someone for the first time, where we ask them kind of where it was that they grew up, and if they felt like it was an area where you sort of needed to be tough or you needed to be comfortable with confrontation.
Yeah. No, I grew up in an area called Tigers Bay in North Belfast, which was a, you know, pretty tough place. It was on... Tigers Bay is on an interface, so the neighbouring housing estate is a housing estate called the New Lodge, and my housing estate, Tigers Bay, was 100% loyalist, unionist, and the neighbouring one, which was separated by one street, was 100% Republican or nationalist. So there was a lot of madness, rioting and just fighting and crazy stuff. So I think it did probably have to be tough, but in saying that, I don't think I was that tough when I was a kid, and I think boxing kind of helped me, certainly helped me a bit. I was very quiet and very shy and stuff as a kid, but boxing gave me a bit more confidence about myself, I think.
And you obviously allude into kind of the troubles in Northern Ireland there and everything. How important was it for you to try and bring people together through your kind of sporting career and your boxing? You know, the troubles are very well documented in Northern Ireland. So how was it for you going, I'd like to bring everyone together?
Yeah, well, look, I grew up at the back end of the troubles, The Good Friday Agreement was signed in 1998, so I was 11 then. I'd already been boxing. I started boxing when I was 7, but it wasn't a natural, like, thought process for me. Like, I want to bring the people together and be some unifying person. I was just being myself, really, and it wasn't, you know, people. People know who I am and where I'm from, but I just didn't feel like I had to, like, nail my colours to the mast or be constantly, you know, I was just trying to be a nice guy, really, and people seemed to like that.
Tell us about the first pro fight, Cole, because, well, you know, you'd gone through the amateur sort of ranks and stuff, and then tell us about that sort of the first pro fight and how that journey started.
Yeah, I had my first pro fight was in the Liverpool Olympia in 2009, I think I turned pro. So Liverpool Olympia. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but it's a shithole. I was boxing. First fight on the card, probably 5:30. Nobody's there. And I boxed a Hungarian fellow who wasn't very good, to be honest. But that's kind of what happens in boxing at the start. And I stopped him, I think, in the second round. But what I remember about my first pro fight was the gloves. So they're obviously professional gloves are different than amateur gloves. Amateur gloves are a lot more safe and stuff. And I remember putting a first pair of pro gloves on, actually going for it. I haven't had them on my hands before, which was probably a mistake. Like, I should have knew what they felt like. I remember in the change rooms getting gloved up and thinking, like, what the fuck are these things? Like, you know, they didn't feel like the gloves I'd been boxing with for the previous, you know, 10 or 12 years, wherever it was. So, yeah, that was it. I fought a Hungarian fella who wasn't great in the Liverpool Olympia, yeah, on a Matchroom show. When, so this was before Eddie Hearn had even got involved. It was Barry Hearn was promoting the show. So that's how long ago that was.
How quickly did you develop the following? Because your fan base was ridiculous, you know. Like, how quickly did that grow?
I mean, it started, even when I was an amateur, like I used to sell out the local social club. You know, you'd fit maybe 400 people into it. And so I was even a bit of a ticket seller as an amateur, but it started to grow pretty early, to be honest. And I think that's why the promoters, they're interested in someone that can sell tickets. And obviously the relationship with McGuigan at the time and you know, people seeing what Barry had done. And there's a lot of similarities between me and Barry and our backgrounds and our upbringings and stuff. And people, Barry had he had an amazing fan base when he was fighting. And I think people, you had McGuigan fans support me. You had my own fans and you had just boxing fans as well. So it started to pick up pretty early, to be honest.
How unique is it for someone in the smaller weight classes to have that kind of fan base and get that kind of notoriety? Because I definitely feel like there's still a thing in MMA. There's a couple of stars, but there's still a thing in MMA where a lot of people look down on the smaller weight classes. There's those idiots in the pub that say, oh, yeah, but I'm three stone heavier than him, I'll knock him out. Where, like, even though it's a trained killer that's, like, there to box you up or, like, kick you, whatever it is in MMA. Is it similar in boxing? Do you feel like the smaller weight classes have to work that bit harder and they've got it tougher to get people's attention?
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, I suppose, look, yeah, the majority of smaller fighters, I suppose, that I don't think they get the recognition they deserve. There's nothing better for me than to watch two little, you know, flyweights, Japanese flyweights going at each other. I love to watch the lighter guys. I think it's very highly skilled and a lot quicker as well. You maybe don't see as many knockouts, but it's tougher and the same as MMA. Look, it's hard. People want to see blood and guts and they want to see the big guys knocking people out. So that's one of the reasons. But I was very, very lucky that I had the support that I did. There, like you said, there's not many in and around the lighter weight divisions that had the support that I did. But I suppose, talking back to McGuigan as well, like he had an incredible fan base while he was fighting. And I think people may have seen, you know, the similarities and got behind me too.
You know, having such a following obviously then comes with pressure and to, you know, for you to find Ireland, like, how do you manage that pressure? And, you know, what was your kind of, because you've got a fight on your hands, let alone worrying about the fact that you've got Ireland and so many people all around the world wanting you with so much expectation to see Cole Frampton do this remarkable performance. Like, how would you manage the pressure of that following? And also, I'll double load this question. And then when you're having that fight and you hear that crowd roar, how difficult is it to stay on the game plan and not get caught up in the furore of the fans?
Well, so the pressure, Yeah, I had a lot of pressure on my career. Obviously, during my career, like, you know, being involved in some big fights, people, I suppose when you box at home as well, people just expect you to win and they think that it's a given and this is what's happening. They maybe don't know too much about the opponent, but they just think, Carl's a boxer, he'll win, he'll be all right. And that brings its own type of pressure. I remember actually I'd fought Kiko Martinez twice, but the second time I fought him, there was so much pressure on me for going into that fight because it was for a world title and I'd already beaten him before. And people just expected me to beat him again. But, you know, they look at the result in the first fight and it says knockout in round 9. But, I mean, it was a tough fight up until the knockout. Really, really tough. Nip and tuck. And, you know, I was pissing blood off that fight. I had 2 perforated eardrums.
You were actually pissing blood?
I was pissing blood after the first Kiko fight. So when I was meant to fight him the next time, people just expected me to beat him. And I remember feeling really strange about that fight, thinking like, this is a tougher fight than people realize. Lucky enough, I won the fight and I done well. But, and the noise, the second part of the question you asked, you know, the atmosphere, it's just, to be honest, it just sounds like noise to me. It doesn't, you don't hear the singing or, sometimes actually you can pick out individual voices at ringside, you know, people giving instructions or whatever. But it just sounds like a wall of noise, really. It's nothing.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Not a lot you can pick out from it.
I feel like I have to go back to pissing blood because I'm sure in the fight game, whether it's MMA, boxing, whatever, these kind of things maybe happen quite regularly or so. I don't know, but like to fans of combat sports, sometimes you get caught up in the whole furore of like, oh, what's next for this guy? What an amazing knockout, all that stuff. And you don't always see the realities of what you guys actually go through at the top end of the sport and the injuries and stuff like that. Like when something like that happens to you, you've had a fight, are you going, oh, I know that I'm going to be, like, are you in the fight going, oh, he's landed a really good body shot there or something, I know something's going to be happening later? Or, and when you're then going to the toilet and it's red, are you like, oh, this could be really serious? Are you scared? Are you worried about the next fight? Like, how do you compute all of that information?
So obviously Kiko, if you know Kiko Martinez, he's a small squat guy, punches really well to the body. So he hurt me to the body a number of times in the fight. But how did it feel when I was pissing blood? Do you know what? I actually felt proud of him, being honest. I was like, look, I've just won this fight, but I'm pissing blood. You know what I mean? And I thought there was points in that first fight in particular where it was kind of a coming of age fight for me because it was the first time I really had a bit of adversity in a fight and dig through it and push on. And I remember the whole kind of scenario and the thing that people were telling me before the fight got into it was it'll be a tough fight for 4 rounds, then he'll slow down. And I remember just thinking, like, we're in round 8 here and he hasn't started to slow down yet. Like, what the fuck's going on? So I was asking myself a lot of questions in that fight. Easily could have quit, could have stayed on my stool at a point. So when I go backstage afterwards and piss blood, I was proud.
That's weird, mental.
Strange thing to say, but you know, I hope you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but it's crazy. But again, I think people like us that can't imagine really doing what you've done and what like MMA fighters do and stuff like that. Like it we can't quite understand it. I think if I was looking down the toilet bowl and it was red, I'd be like, medic.
I also want to talk about you. We first met you at the TNT launch, and I did come up and tell you that I thought the documentary you made was absolutely fantastic and important. When you know you suffer from a defeat, or you know when all of a sudden you've retired from the sport and you know you've not got that routine, like how did you manage your mental health then, Carl? And what drove you to make that documentary?
So I was approached to do the documentary a number of months before it was aired, and it was something I wanted to get involved in, to be honest. You know, people talk about mental health and poor mental health, and I think at times, you know, sometimes people are down and people feel sad and stuff. It took me so that. The end of my career, it wasn't a lot to deal with, if I'm being honest, because I knew going into my last fight that I was retiring. Like, I told the people closest to me that win, lose, or draw, this is my last fight. And I planned on winning. I wanted to win, but I just realised I wasn't the same fighter that I used to be, and that was it. And that was okay. I was happy and content with what I'd done in my career. So the end wasn't that big a deal, but a couple of defeats I had at Josh Warrington, and Leo Santa Cruz, in the last few years of my career, they were more hard to deal with, if I'm being honest. Especially the Josh Warrington fight, because it was favourite getting into the fight. And I still feel, I love Josh and have a lot of respect for him, but I still feel if I, at my very best, and if I had went into that fight with the right mentality, I still feel like I could have beaten him. He beat me convincingly, if I'm being honest. But I went into that fight thinking that he couldn't hurt me. And there was nothing in his record to suggest that he was a puncher. And I've been in some big punchers and been okay. But I've never been hurt as much in a fight as I was against Josh Warrington. And that was really hard for me to deal with. Just trying to cope, you know, come to terms with that in my opinion, I've lost to a guy who I think I'm better than. That was really, really difficult. And my close friends and family were around me to support me. My wife has been brilliant as well. For me, like, being with the kids, being at home, doing the stuff that the normal dads do, that's what's good for my mental health. Because I was away for so much of my career and my training camps were always spent away from home. So I think that just being at home, getting a bit of fresh air, you know, going to the park with the kids, bringing the kids to football, for me, that's, you know, I love doing that.
Has there been a really positive reaction to the documentary? Like, have people come up to you and said how much it's like meant to them or that they've related or anything like that?
Yeah, the feedback has been fantastic, really fantastic. And I actually had a couple of close friends who I didn't know had struggled with mental health, and they had issues, and I pointed them in the right direction. After watching the documentary, I kind of directed them to a couple of people, a place called West Wellbeing Centre in West Belfast who do amazing stuff and helping the community. So even the fact that happened meant the documentary was a success for me. You know, two people reached out saying they were struggling and they were able to get help. But the feedback was universally, really, really good. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Barry McGuigan earlier in this interview, and he was a huge part of your journey early on. You mentioned that there was a lot of relatability fans saw parts of Barry in yourself and stuff like that. But unfortunately, there was moments later on in your career where the relationship sort of soured. I know that there was court cases and all that kind of stuff involved. And you've got an autobiography out where I think you talk about some of this stuff. How is the relationship now?
There is no relationship. The relationship's dead. There'll never be a relationship. And I mean, if you read the book, people would understand why. It was the court case and everything that went on. It was it was sad that it happened. Like, I loved these people and it felt like, you know, almost like, my dad's around still, and my dad's a great dad, but I almost felt like McGuigan was another father type figure to me, and his sons were groomsmen at my wedding. And it was really, really sad when it broke down. But to be honest, I think that I probably hung around them for too long. And, you know, people are telling me these things. I'm waiting on purse money coming for sometimes close to a year. I'm being fobbed off with all these excuses. And I was just hoping that the things that I was thinking was wrong. And it just got to a point where it was too much. And I got out, and that was it. It was necessary to have the court case and stuff. But it was difficult. That was a difficult period for me as well. I had a lot of angst and anger and hatred towards them. I found out more stuff. Obviously, I had enough to start a court case with them. But while the court process was going on, there was so much more stuff that I found out that I was disgusted about and saddened about. And that was a tough time for me. But now I'm relaxed about it. Like, there is no relationship with the guys at all. And I don't care about that. But It took me quite a while to get over it, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, really sorry to hear that. And it's obviously sad to hear when someone, as you said, had such a positive impact in your life, and then it's ended up in such a negative way. I mean, you're saying that there's other things that you found out. Is there anything, advice that you would give to younger fighters, whether it be MMA, boxing or anything, who have got managers, trainers, anything like that, things that they, you know, need to look out for, or red flags or anything like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, what I would say, and I genuinely mean this, was fighters, and I suppose MMA guys might be the same, that we come from similar backgrounds. A lot of the time, you know, you're not getting posh, you know, private school boys doing MMA or boxing, really, the majority of times anyway. So we come from backgrounds where we don't really know about business or anything like that. And boxing and MMA, it's a business. These are businesses, and dirty businesses sometimes. What I would always advise, and I have given this advice, was any contract you're given, like I would have signed things on trust. Like Barry has put a contract in front of me, and I'd have just thought, you know, this guy's got my best interest at heart. I love him, and I'd have just signed it. I would say just have a good lawyer, someone that can look over contractual obligations and stuff. Don't be too trusting. Don't be too naive. Have a good lawyer in this fight game, I think, is definitely something that every boxer should have.
Okay. You've mentioned MMA fighters there. We're now living in a time where MMA fighters are moving into your back garden now, and we've seen Ngannou versus Tyson Fury, and now he's going to be fighting Anthony Joshua. Can I get your thoughts on Francis's performance against Fury, and also how you think he's going to do against Anthony Joshua?
I thought he was unbelievable against Fury. I think that going into the fight, and this was me trying to think with a rational head, that Francis is a big specimen of a man, but he's never really boxed before, so there's no way he can beat Tyson Fury. But incredible performance. He knocked him down. On the night, I actually thought Francis beat him, but when I watched it back, I think I scored it to Fury by one round. But it was close. unbelievable. Couldn't believe what I was watching. And I think that he's a better boxer than people think he was. I think with the going into the fight with AJ, it's a really interesting fight. I like AJ a lot, and I think that his link up with Ben Davison is very good for him. I think that his last fight, I think I've seen some improvements, which is good. But one thing about AJ is he can be a bit static and a bit straight, and there's not much head movement and stuff. Like Francis, he's a massive specimen of a man, and you know, just a beast of a man. But he can't be hit, and that's just my worry about AJ in this fight, getting hit by Francis, who can clearly punch. But in saying all that, I expect AJ to win. I hope he does for boxing's sake. But Francis, I mean, unbelievable man. I was lucky enough to spend a wee bit of time with him around the Fury and Ngannou fight. Lovely big fella as well. It's great to see. It's great to see. And what I would say is, like, he's getting really well paid now, you know what yeah. I mean? Not that he wasn't previously, but I think that
comparatively, it's way more.
Yeah, it's way more, and he deserves it. Absolutely deserves it all. Like, his whole backstory, his life, and everything that's been on.
It's a movie in the making, Cole. It really is.
100%. I mean, it's the whole backstory is unbelievable. Really is.
So you're picking AJ. So tell me how you think that AJ is going to win.
I don't think he'll knock him out. I think he'll win. I think he'd probably win on points. Tyson Fury bounced an elbow off Francis's head and there was no reaction from him. He's a tough guy. I think it would be very difficult to knock him out. Saying that, like, AJ can really punch. He's, you know, once he puts his shots together, he's a good combination puncher, and obviously very powerful and very athletic. But I think it'll be a long fight. I think it'll go the distance. And I think AJ should win on points.
Mm. Well, you've given us like a good bit of punditry there. How's the transition been to going from pro athlete to pundit? And have you had any moments where you've spoken about a fight and some fighters have been unhappy about your comments?
A few times. Look, well, I'll talk about the transition first. It was easy because I was doing little bits of punditry while I was still boxing from time to time. So, and I mean, in my opinion, I think it's the easiest job in the world. It's like literally say what you see. You watch a fight and you talk about it. So I'm really enjoying that, and I'm enjoying the stuff I'm doing with TNT. But there's been a few people have been upset by things I say. And to be honest, look, I don't try to upset people. I just try to be honest. And I will say, you know, if someone's had a bad performance, I'll call you out on it and I'll say that. But if someone equally has been good, then I'll praise them and say that. But I had one. So John Fury, I had a run in with me before. And it was my opinion on Tommy Fury against Jake Paul. And I thought Jake Paul would beat him. And that was it. And I didn't think it was going to, you know, I didn't say he was going to knock him out or anything. I just thought that I wasn't that sure about how good Tommy Fury is. I'm still not, to be honest. Yep. But for them reasons, I thought that Jake Paul might just nip it in a fight with him. But they had a fight. It was a close fight. Tommy Fury won. But previous to that, yeah, John Fury was really upset with me saying what I said. Even though I didn't criticize the kid at all, he gripped my arm one day. I have a bone to pick with you. And he grabbed me. And I shit myself.
He is a massive bloke. And he seems he could do anything. And it's so unpredictable as a human being. I would not want him upset with me at all.
He's a mad man, John. To be honest, up until that point, me and John got on well with each other, but he's obviously upset with my opinions on the fight. And look, I get it. You know, it's his son. Even though I wasn't that critical, I was just, again, trying to be honest. But John John wasn't happy.
Well, it reminds me a little bit, not the John bit, but like fighters and interactions with pundits. I don't know if you're aware of Dan Hardy, who that does such great fight breakdowns and stuff. And he said he was doing that for a while, and he like did a chat with Max Holloway. And as Max Holloway left like the interview, he shouted back at Dan, like, "Stop giving away all my points, like all my attributes. Stop giving all my stuff away," because Dan's got such a good read on it all. It was people now looking at your YouTube and getting better at fighting me.
Yeah, Dan's brilliant. I worked alongside him a couple of times in the lead up to Fury and Ngannou, and then I worked with him on the night. And even his knowledge on boxing was really, really strong and really good. He's clearly a very smart man. He knows what he's talking about, and a good guy too. But I don't know. I don't know if I would go into as much detail as Dan, not because I don't want to, but just because I don't think I can. I think he's probably a better pundit than I am, and he really knows the fight game inside out.
What's your thoughts on MMA, Carl?
I like it. I really like it. I enjoy it. I watch. I would call myself a bit of a casual fan. Like, I would watch the big nights. But I enjoy it. Sometimes if I'm sitting in, you know, on a Friday or Saturday night, I'll stick it on TNT. Even the smaller fights. But I remember actually what got me into it. Obviously, McGregor, being from where I'm from, McGregor was, you know, huge, and everybody just started to become interested in MMA because of him. A lot of people anyway. But I remember I was in America for a fight. Who was I fighting? I can't even remember who I was fighting. Well, a kid called Alejandro Gonzalez. And I remember we went to this pub for a bit of food. It was like chicken wings and all that sort of stuff. And the MMA was on in the background. It was UFC night. And it was it Robbie Lawler and McDonald, was it?
Oh my God, what a night to catch a fight.
That was the first MMA fight I watched.
Oh my God.
That's incredible.
Was it Lawler's nose? It looked like his nose was hanging off.
It was his lip. Lawler's lip there, and McDonald has his nose just shattered.
It was crazy. Unbelievable. I remember thinking, like, why have I never watched this before? This is insane. But yeah, that was kind of the first MMA fight that I'd ever watched. But like I said, I watch the big nights now.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the other Irish lad, Ian Garry? He's getting a lot of hype at the moment.
Yeah, he's going well, isn't he? I think he's good too, isn't he? Yeah, he's a good fighter. I see a lot of people giving him stick as well. Mm. But I mean, I think a lot of it's down to McGregor, isn't it? And the impact he's had in Ireland as a whole. We've even got some good mixed martial artists up here fighting in Liam McCourt, obviously, the female, fighting in Bellator. There's a big bill coming up anyway in Belfast and Bellator. But it's a great night out. I've been to one UFC, and I've been to two Bellators. And the production on both of them, I mean, they're really good nights. Like, they're really well run. Atmosphere is incredible. And it's a sport that I've, to be honest, pre the Lawler McDonald fight, I wasn't into at all. But it's a sport that I've started to take an interest in.
Do you think it's more difficult to be a specialist in one discipline, like a boxer or something like that, or do you think it's more difficult to be very good at multiple disciplines, like in MMA?
Well, look, I'll be honest here. I think it's more difficult to be very good in multiple disciplines. You know, there's guys, obviously, they come from in the MMA world, you know, they specialize in maybe one thing, of a black belt in judo or karate or whatever, but they're very, very good at a lot of other things. I was good at boxing. I was very good at it. But one of my issues as a fighter was flexibility. I was always really, like, mobility was bad and flexibility was bad. I some of the stuff that these MMA guys do, look at McGregor, and they can still do the splits, and they're like, you know, mid 30s, and but they can also rip your head off of a, you know, punch. It's like, it's crazy, honestly. And I think to be very good in the mixed martial arts world, I'm going to say this now as a boxer, but I think it's probably a bit more difficult than having one discipline.
Mm. What? Who do you think? We've taken up a lot of your time, and we really appreciate it, Carl. We would just want to fire a couple of last questions at you, if that's all right.
Okay.
Who's the best boxer on the planet right now?
Terence Crawford.
Mm.
I love Terence Crawford. I love everything about him. I think he's an incredible fighter. Yeah, and I remember actually when he fought Errol Spence. And he'd done a demolition job on Errol Spence, and no one really seen that coming. They all thought it was going to be a close fight. I said after the fight on TNT, I think Terence Crawford beats Canelo. And loads of people laughed at me. But now there's talk of that fight happening. And I genuinely believe Terence Crawford would beat Canelo. I think he's an incredible fighter.
Absolutely. Who's the best boxer to ever do it?
I don't know. I was a big fan of Roberto Duran.
You can say yourself if you want.
No, it's not me. Flip me. I'd say you got to go way, way back to when guys were fighting, you know, 20 times a year and stuff. And you have to say, I think the greatest fighter of all time, Sugar Ray Robinson, has to be.
Wonderful.
What was the hardest moment of your career?
Hardest moment? What was the hardest moment? Probably, I mean, that Kiko fight that we talked about was pretty tough. But the Warrington fight, I think, and getting over that and coming to terms with it was really, really difficult. The first three rounds in the Warrington fight were probably the worst three rounds I've had in my whole career. It was mental. And going out for the fourth round, it felt like I'd done 12 already. So, everything... The Warrington fight and the aftermath of that was really difficult, I think.
And ending on a better note, what was the happiest moment of your career?
Winning my first world title was always really, you know, that's always going to be good. That's the dream you have when you start boxing, to be a world champion. And to be honest, if someone had have granted me a wish before I turned professional and of becoming a world champion, but you'll lose it in your first defense, I think I'd have taken that. So I'm very happy with everything I've done. But what your first world title or the Santa Cruz win in New York when no one expected me to do it, that was another big one.
Oh, wonderful. Carl, thanks so much for giving up your time and coming on the show today, mate. Really, really appreciate it.
No worries, boys.
When is the Stablemate whiskey back in stock?
We will have it in, I think, this week or next week. It's going to be, so for people online, you know, you'll be able to order it and stuff, but you can get it in most of the off licenses in Northern Ireland. We've had a few discussions about bringing it to England as well. America as well. It should be on the East Coast very soon. So, it'll be back online. I think it should be stocked in the next week or so.
Fantastic. And is it a website that people can go to buy it?
Yeah, just stablematewhiskey.com.
Fantastic. Brilliant. We'll put that in the show notes so people can go and click it and
thanks,
go and have a drop. Yeah. Lovely.
No worries.
Carl,
all the best.
Thank you so much, mate.
Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Carl Frampton, what a lovely guy. It's so interesting when you hear boxers, but obviously, like, every boxer is going to love boxing,
yes.
You know. But when you asked Carl about the sort of the what's going to be harder, to be great at one discipline or to be good at, you know, a multitude, and you know, he couldn't help but kind of go, well, yeah, it's going to be tougher to be good at a multiple amount of disciplines,
yep.
And fantastic, great to get his thoughts on the AJ fight, and obviously to hear his thoughts. I remember when
this may have gone out after that fight,
we might try
and clip those bits and get them out to you beforehand, but that was really interesting. Just I don't know why the pissing blood thing really got me. I couldn't let that go.
I remember,
was like, that is mental.
I read Chris Eubank's book, and he said when he fought Nigel Benn the first time, he said he pissed blood after that.
Imagine
imagine that being it. It's so hard in the stomach.
Oh, God.
You wee-wee blood.
Don't want a wee-wee blood.
You don't want a wee-wee blood.
Don't want a wee-wee blood. Oh, well, look, we hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please give us a subscribe on the old YouTube or on your podcast, however you are consuming this episode. And go and follow us on the socials as well. We're on Instagram, TikTok, and X. So please go over there, follow us on the socials. And if you give us any kind of like positive reviews and subscribes, as I said, it really helps us grow the show. And then we can continue to get guests on the caliber of Carl. We got lucky with Carl because we bumped into him and he was such a nice bloke. But if you want us to keep bringing you really brilliant guests on this show, hit that subscribe button, hit the 5-star reviews and all that stuff, because it helps boost the profile of the show and means that more people will be interested in coming on.
Absolutely. And if you're a fan of boxing, when we first built this studio that you're watching us presenting from at the moment, we had Johnny Fisher in. Bosh! We had Johnny come in and talk about his career today. We mentioned Dan Hardy on the show. If you scroll back to back in the day, we had Dan Hardy on, and that's always a fantastic conversation. We said we're going to try and get Dan back on now. He's making big moves over in the PFL Bellator hybrid. So go and explore that back catalogue, because there's hundreds of episodes, and there's probably been a good 30 now in this jazzy studio that we're in. I need to stop saying jazzy. But yeah, please subscribe, and we will see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.